That's not a
10-yard decision. No, 384 decision. That's a I do my lineups on 384. Okay. Yeah.
Welcome, everyone, to the 384 Decision, a new sports podcast brought to you by WHUS and the Daily Campus. I'm Jeff Lemon, the WHUS Sports Director, and I'm joined alongside three members of the Daily Campus. I guess we'll go around the room and have everyone introduce themselves before we get going.
Hey, everybody. This is Matt Zampini. I'm the sports editor over at the Daily Campus.
Hey guys, I'm Dan Madigan. I'm the Associate Sports Editor at the Daily Campus.
My name's Yolandi Carlo. I'm a staff writer at the Daily Campus. And in case you are wondering what the heck the 384 decision is, it's just a fun quote Kevin Ollie said at practice one day. One of the other beat reporters asked him about a starting lineup change. And he answered, you know, that's something I'm going to have to think about driving home on 384. It's a 384 decision.
We're always drawing inspiration from KO. Well, today's topics, we've got men's AAC tournament preview. We also will talk about the women's basketball team. They just competed in their very own AAC tournament this past weekend. They'll be looking forward to the NCAA selection show on Monday. We also will be picking our player of the years, rookie of the years, and our eventual men's AAC championship winner later on the show as well. So we're going to start, however, with the women's team. Guys, they just capped off a pretty simple run in the American Athletic Tournament. Dan, you and I were there the entire weekend. Not much competition Saturday, Sunday. Monday was interesting for a little while, but the Huskies eventually pulled away, and now they have 30 wins for the 11th straight year.
Yeah, Monday's game was pretty interesting to take in. Just about a week before that, USF was up 25-24 at the half before they ended up losing to UConn by 20. Sure enough, Courtney Williams said after the semifinal win for USF, as they took on the Huskies on Monday, they said that UConn was beatable. That got around the UConn locker room pretty quick, and even though the Huskies struggled in the first quarter, they got out. They got ahead. Katie Lou Samuelson had 8 points in a little under 2 minutes in the first half, and from there on out, it was all UConn, and it was just a usual dominant performance against one of the better teams in the country.
It seems like... Go ahead, Elon.
Dan, do you think Katie Lou Samuelson's shooting ability translated well to Mohegan Sun?
She shot the lights out. Earlier in the season, she shot a lot better at Gamble than she did in other places, but as of late, she's just been phenomenal pretty much anywhere. She shot a little bit over 56% from three at Mohegan Sun for the entire tournament, which is unbelievable. And the thing about her is that it's not just she's not just jacking up threes. She's playing within the offense, taking shots, taking smart shots, and she's not afraid to pass, do some stuff off the ball as well, and she's playing better defense. So she's turned into a really special player for UConn.
Yeah, I just want to go back to the Courtney Williams thing. You know, UConn and, you know, Breonna Stewart, Mariah, they can go for four championships. So, you know, their mindset is already, you know, where they want to go. And it's not really smart for, you know, someone else to light another fire under them. And, I mean, I get what she's trying to say. Like, what is she going to say? Like, oh, we're not going to beat them.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's still kind of just like, you know, why would you do that just to make them even more driven?
I mean, to be fair to Courtney Williams, she did have a point. She one of the only team in the country to take UConn with a lead at halftime. That, like I said, they were up 25-24 at half the last time they squared off. And Courtney Williams is just a phenomenal player, and she has the potential to carry a team like that against a very talented team like UConn. It'll be exciting to see what the Bulls do in the NCAA tournament. I think they're very underrated compared to some other teams in the country, and they have a good coach and a bunch of other players around Williams, so it'll be interesting to see how they do.
Looking ahead to the NCAA tournament for the women, their first two games are at Gamble, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And then they go down to Bridgeport for the Sweet 16 and Elite 8?
Yep.
Is there any way they're not going to the Final Four?
Nope. Going for nine straight Final Fours, right, is on the line. I think they've made it 8 years in a row. That in itself is pretty spectacular. It's really not fair, though, to give them such an edge with the in-state games. Obviously, you see why they have to do it. But does it really give another team a chance? Not really.
Yeah, it's just one of those weird things where it's kind of trying to draw people to come to the games. Obviously, UConn's a big draw, and especially around here, so it makes sense to have the games there. But that being said, the Huskies did have some trouble in last year's Elite Eight, right, Matt? You want to talk about that?
Yeah.
That game against Dayton?
Yeah, that was in Albany, and Dayton, I remember the other beat writer, Spencer, we were just saying, like, wow, these girls have made every shot in the first half, and I'm pretty sure they were leading in the half. And, you know, they hung with them in the second half, but then, again, as we've seen a couple times against South Florida this year, UConn has too many options, and they're just way too good. So,
I mean, it's very unlikely that a team could take UConn wire-to-wire in those first four rounds of the tournament, but it is possible. The Huskies have really had trouble defending the three this year. If a team like Dayton can jack up threes and they start falling, even UConn, how great they can score and how great they play on defense, things could go wrong, and they could make a game very interesting very quickly.
Do you guys remember the game a few years ago between Baylor and Louisville in the women's tournament when Baylor was undefeated and Shoney Schimmel and Louisville? They must have hit 20 threes in that Elite Eight game to win that.
Was that the game where Shoney Schimmel got all up in
Garnett's
face?
Yeah, the over-the-head bank shot and one.
Yep.
But don't you think it's going to take that kind of effort for someone to beat UConn, where they have to hit maybe 60% of their threes, make over 10 three-pointers, and basically be red-hot for an entire 40-minute stretch?
Yeah, it would have to be something like that, quite frankly. And there'd have to just be some fluke things on UConn's end. There'd have to be one of their players in foul trouble, probably Stewart or Tuck or Mariah Jefferson. It'd be very unlikely that a team can come in and just shoot the lights out, just because UConn plays so well defensively, just principles and just basic defensive stuff. They do such a great job at closing out and preventing a lot of open looks. But if that did happen and teams started hitting shots and, you know, Stewart gets called for a ticky-tack foul, Tuck gets called for a ticky-tack foul, something like that, it could get interesting quick. And there's not as much parity in the women's game as there is in the men's, but it's not out of the question. And Dayton kind of proved that last year.
Is this tournament a done deal? Is UConn just going to win this thing and there's nothing else to it?
I don't think so. I think there's still a few good teams out there. Like I said, even for UConn, I think USF is relatively dangerous. And same thing with South Carolina and Notre Dame. Those teams have always played UConn close. Notre Dame came in here and did a great job against UConn before eventually losing by 10 points. So while it's likely that UConn could probably win their fourth straight national championship, I wouldn't chalk it up as a definite.
What happens first? Sterling Gibbs passes on a 2-on-1 fast break, or Breonna Stewart loses a game her senior year?
I don't know.
Oh, what happens first?
Probably Sterling Gibbs passing. To be close, though.
There's no way they're losing a game. There's no way. Stewie and Mariah are not letting that happen. They're this close, and I just can't. I think it's a lock.
I think I'm with Matt. I think there could be close games, but do I see them losing? I don't know if any team can take it that far. I really don't.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing here, too, something that kind of gets lost in all of this, is the play of Morgan Tuck. When she's in the lineup, they are pretty much unstoppable. Yeah.
She came back to life this weekend offensively.
She was phenomenal. She hasn't looked like that in at least a year. She really hasn't been herself. So if she's playing like she did this weekend, it's tough for anybody else. But if she, you know, is a little banged up, or like I said, she gets into foul trouble, she's not in the lineup, it makes it a lot different for UConn, and they're a little bit more beatable.
Who is the most important piece on this women's team outside of the big three, Tuck, Stewart, and Jefferson?
I think you can kind of vouch for this, too, after seeing her play this weekend, but it has to be Katie Lou Samuelson. Like I said, she's can't come in and been expected to be a great three-point shooter, and she's done that in the last half of the season, but now she's starting to do a lot of other things. She's playing smart. She's playing good defense. She's starting to rebound now. She's really getting her hands all over the place in the entire game on both ends. So it should be interesting to see how she continues to develop through the tournament. And it seems like she kind of has the right mindset to just continually get better and just work on improving and helping the team win.
How about Kia Nurse? No love for Kia?
Kia's great. She's been struggling a lot, but towards the end of this year, like I said, she's starting to pick up. And like I said, I don't know what could have happened, but it's amazing how much better this team looks from a week ago. And they looked great a week ago, but since March has rolled around, they look even better now. And Kia's playing better. Katie Lou Samuelson's playing phenomenal. Obviously, you know, the big three, Tuck, Mariah, Stewie, they're playing great. So it'll be interesting. And then you have guys like Gabby Williams and Natalie Butler coming off the bench who are talented. They'd easily be playing 30, 35 minutes a game for pretty much any other team in the country. And Gabby's lucky if she plays 20, and Natalie's lucky if she gets in at all. So it's just amazing how deep they are and how many different lineups they can throw at people and kind of match up. If they can't play their game, they'll do fine playing somebody else's.
So we'll take a quick break. On deck next is men's AAC tournament preview. Elon and Matt both heading down to Orlando this weekend to cover the men's team. They'll start with Cincinnati, and we'll touch on that game when we return here on the 384 Decision. Welcome back to the 384 Decision, a new sports podcast brought to you by WHUS and the Daily Campus. Jeff Lemon, Elon DiCarlo, Dan Madigan, and Matt Zampini on hand. We just finished talking about the women's basketball team's trek through the American tournament, and we previewed the NCAA tournament for the women as well. Now we'll flip it over to the men's side. They have yet to play the conference tournament. That starts tomorrow. The Huskies, though, will not play until Friday. And right now, guys, UConn clearly on the bubble. Right now, Lenardi has them as the first four out, joining Tulsa, another American Conference member. And the Huskies don't have it easy early. A Cincinnati team that's already beaten them twice. Huskies in the last two conference tournaments have beaten them on buzzer beaters, so you know that the Bearcats are not going to be particularly fond of UConn this time around.
It's never fun having to play Cincinnati, both the style of play on the floor and the fact that it usually comes down to being a nail biter. These two teams, even dating back to the Big East days, have just played absolute just gutter wars. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a rock fight every time these two sides play, and I anticipate more of the same come Friday afternoon. Mick Cronin's side always just ready to beat you up, and that's something UConn's going to have to deal with. I think the big key to the game is going to be the foul trouble of Amita Brima. If we can find a way to have Brima play 30 minutes, the Huskies are going to be in good shape to take it to Cincinnati. But if Brima gets in foul trouble, look out, because interior defense has been somewhere UConn struggled.
Are we all in agreement that if UConn loses Friday, they're done? They're not going to make the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I said that even before, you know, the seedings came out before the game on Sunday. You know, a lot of bubble teams are doing well so far in these conference tournaments that have already started. And as you said before, Lenardi had moved UConn to the first four out. So, you know, if they lose to Cincy on Friday, Cincy is a team that, you know, is on the bubble too. So I think they're in real bad shape if they lose on Friday. Plus, you know, pretty much every team in the American is on the bubble. So a UConn loss in the first round or the quarterfinals would not be good for the Huskies.
Another thing is just that teams like Wichita State and Monmouth, teams that were predicted to win their leagues and lost in the conference tournament and are now kind of in that bubble zone, now they're kind of competing with spots for UConn too. And some of them have more attractive or appealing resumes than the Huskies, so it'll be kind of interesting to see what the committee does with that. But it looks like UConn, if they don't win on Friday, they're probably going to be out. But a win on Friday might be able to put them either in that first four in or maybe kind of squeak them into like a 10 seed in some other region.
I think Friday essentially is a play-in game for both Cincinnati and UConn. Whoever wins is most likely going to take that second spot for the American in the tournament, because right now I can't really envision more than two teams from the conference getting in.
Yes.
I think it's unless Temple wins the conference tournament, then it's for sure going to be two. But if Temple doesn't win the tournament, no matter what happens, I think it's only going to be two. I think Temple and the conference tournament winner get in.
Yeah, I mean, last year only two teams made it. I think it was SMU and Cincinnati. I mean, this conference, you know, we've seen it before. It doesn't get any respect, so.
Should it get more respect? I mean, the teams, there's 5-6 decent teams, solid teams. They beat each other up. There's a lot of parity in the league, but is anybody really that good? SMU's got the most talent, but they're nothing. They're not that special of a ball club.
And they don't even matter anymore. And yeah, unfortunately, yeah. They can't even play in the tournament. I guess that makes it a little bit easier for a team like UConn. But, you know, how big does that Houston game mean now that UConn gave away at Gamble a few weeks ago? Houston's the 2 seed now. And the Huskies, instead of avoiding the two teams that swept them in the regular season, now they have to play both of those sides. I'm giving Temple a pass in the USF-ECU game.
The Houston game is going to, where the Huskies are going to look back at that and regret that game the most. Their other losses all were pretty close, came down to the wire. Houston outplayed them for 40 minutes, and a lot of it came down to energy and effort. I could not tell you how many times the Huskies got beaten back down the floor and gave up easy, wide-open transition layups and jump shots to the Cougars. It's
that game was
beyond frustrating to... First of all, as a fan, to watch that, just to see it's just a lack of energy from the five players on the floor, but then to write about it, and as someone that's watched every game up close, you know there's a lot more talent on the floor and a lot more hustle and grit that should be displayed.
And those are the two things, grit and hustle, that you can always control. You might not be able to control if the basket's going to go in the hoop or not, but on the defensive end, UConn usually brings it, and in that game, really only one of the few that I can remember this year where they didn't bring it. That's a big one that they gave up.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of these games that they lost, you know, should have been wins. Like the first Cincinnati game at XL Center, I think it was, where they gave up that 3-point play right at the end. You know, and I think they're 1-3 against the ranked teams that they've played this year. So, you know, that certainly doesn't bode well for their resume.
I think the team in this field that really matters in terms of affecting whether UConn gets in or not is Tulsa. I don't think anyone is talking about Tulsa right now. They're also in the first four out. So in that regard, I'm going to give them an equal shot as the Huskies. And they play Memphis first. I think all UConn fans are rooting for the Tigers to kind of bring it together and maybe pick up that upset.
For the second straight year, Woodard and Harrison at Tulsa shredded UConn. That backcourt is electric, and that pairing might be the best backcourt in the whole conference.
No team in the country has more seniors than Tulsa. You think they don't want to make the tournament after getting snubbed last year? Mm-hmm. What were they in the RPI last year when they got snubbed? Mid-30s?
Yeah, something around there.
That team's coming to play.
Yeah, that's a good basketball team.
Snubbed too. Oh.
Who's the sleeper in this tournament?
Tulsa.
If you had to pick. Tulsa?
Tulsa.
No Houston? I don't think a lot of people are giving Houston credit either, even though they're the two.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we'll talk about it later, but I think Houston's going to make a run this tournament. I mean, they score the most points in the American. They have the leading scorer.
They got a deep team, too.
Yeah. Dedrick Lawson's very good scorer. You saw that at Gamble when they played the Huskies. So, you know, I think they have a really good shot at winning it.
Are we just eliminating the lower half of the conference? Tulane? Yeah. USF, UCF, they just have no chance?
Well, they finished so below the top half. I mean, but the difference between Memphis and UConn, there's a big difference there.
So all the first-round matchups just go chalk?
The only team I would give a chance, I guess, would be UCF because they are playing at home. They get the worst team in Tulane first, but then you have to bounce back against Houston. It could be winnable in your own gym, but, you know, UCF has been so... up and down, it's tough to really know.
Yeah.
Who do you guys think the X factor is for UConn?
Yeah, we were talking about that the other day at work. I think it's Daniel Hamilton, just because, you know, he is probably the best player that we have on the offensive end. We've seen stretches where, you know, he's been on his game. UConn has looked like one of the best teams in the country. Like, that second, or even that Maryland game, the two halves, you can just tell the first half, you know, outscored by 20 points, and then the second half he came out and was just on fire, both for him and creating for his teammates. And even against UCF on Sunday, that first half, he had, I think, 3 turnovers in 4 minutes, and Ollie just took him out and sat him on the bench and then came back in the second half and was a completely different player. But I think it's him. What do you guys think?
There's a lot of different ways you could go with this. Probably going to get a little flack for this, but I think one of the big X factors is probably either Rodney Purvis or Omar Calhoun, just because I think they can provide a really interesting spark off the bench. Purvis has been really a little inconsistent as of late, but he can come in, hit threes, kind of change the pace of the game. And obviously Omar obviously isn't going to be somebody who's going to score 10, 15 points a night, but he can come in and play meaningful minutes on defense, hit a few threes here and there, and just do a little bit to add a different dimension to the offense. So I think those guys can kind of mix it up.
I still think it comes down to Amit Abraima. I think if he's playing well, and he's playing well for 25, 30, 31 minutes, and he's able to go out there, grab a few rebounds, which is the key to his game. If he's not rebounding, then UConn's going to be in trouble. But if he's out there, he's going to affect shots. He's going to catch a couple lobs. He's probably the most reliable free throw shooter on the team other than Sterling Gibbs.
Also, just something just to note, I've been particularly hard on Brima's inability to catch the ball during his career here, and it is difficult. Some of the passes haven't been too ideal, but I do want to say, since he's gotten the tape removed from his finger, he's been exponentially better at handling the ball and being careful with it in the post. And I think while the numbers don't necessarily show that he's developed as much as everyone has expected, some little stuff like that makes a huge difference, and I think it could be a big deal heading into next year.
Yeah, I think that's a credit to Brima's work ethic, because he does work tremendously hard, and I think the assistant coach, Glenn Miller, is the coach that works with the big men, and they've done a great job at getting Amita to be a competent catcher of the basketball.
Yeah, if Brima can play like he played against SMU when they played at the XL Center and he had that double-double, then UConn's going to be a tough out.
So the men will start on Friday in the American Tournament in the 4-5 game against Cincinnati. We'll have the coverage for you right here on WHUS at 2 p.m. and the Daily Campus. Make sure to check them out online and in print, as they'll be covering the tournament as well. We're going to take another quick break. When we bring it back, we'll wrap up by picking our Player of the Year, Rookie of the Year, and American Tournament Champions when we return here on the 384 Decision. Welcome back to the 384 Decision, everyone. This is our first episode of a new sports podcast brought to you by WHUS and the Daily Campus. I'm Jeff Lemon, the WHUS Sports Director, again joined alongside Elon DiCarlo, Dan Madigan, and Matt Zampini, all of the Daily Campus. We've already touched on the women's AAC tournament and their NCAA hopes. We touched on the men's AAC tournament, what our predictions would be for that game and those games occurring in Orlando this weekend. And now we'll make some predictions. We're going to start with the men's AAC Player of the Year. Matt, who do you got?
I think this is going to be a common answer of all of us, but I got Nick Moore, point guard for SMU. Senior, had a great year, 16 points per game, 5 assists. Pretty ran that team so well on offense, like we saw when they came to play UConn and Hartford. So, there's not really much to say, I think.
Yeah, I have Nick Moore as my Player of the Year, too, just for that floater he had over Amit Abraima in that game at the XL Center. But no, he's just, you can look at him, you watch him play. The numbers speak for himself, 16.1 points per game, 5.2 assists, shooting 41% from three. He's just an all-around great player. I remember a few weeks ago, Zamp and I were actually looking at his stats and comparing them to Shabazz Napier's senior year, and they're actually very similar. So it would have been really interesting to see him play in the tournament, because he's a special player, but unfortunately, it didn't shake out.
The Player of the Year is probably Nick Moore, but any consideration for Quentin Dikoze in Temple? Not even a thought? He's had a tremendous year on a team that came out of nowhere to win the conference. But
you could make the argument, but yeah.
Dikoze deserves a little bit of love. He really took it to UConn this year, and he took it to the rest of the league. But one Nick Moore anecdote that stands out from my time covering the team, Ryan Boatwright absolutely despised Nick Moore. They had like a personal rivalry. It was great to cover. And when the Player of the Year was announced before last year's American Athletic Conference tournament, Boat was like, oh, I hope we play SMU. I'm gonna prove it to Nick Moore what it's like. Nick Moore thoroughly outplayed him in the conference final. That guy is, he's on the short list of UConn killers. He's up there with the Jerry McNamara's of the world. And the minute he graduates cannot come soon enough.
I've got Nick Moore as well. So a clean sweep on AAC Player of the Year. Rookie of the Year, though, I think we have some different thoughts. My pick is Dedrick Lawson of Memphis. Fifth in the AAC in scoring, and he's the conference's leading rebounder. There are a couple of other players, Jamal McMurray, Taco Fall, Jalen Adams, who may have a shot, but I think it's Dedrick Lawson.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jeff. You know, as a freshman, 15 points per game, 9 rebounds. You know, 6'9", 230. He was, I remember that game against when they came to play UConn at Gamble, and Shaq Goodwin got in foul trouble, and, you know, he scored, I think he had 10 points in that game, and I think they were all in, you know, the first 10 minutes of the game. But yeah, he's had a great season, and he's my pick for Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, my pick is Jamal McMurray from USF. Not a rebounder like Lawson, but one of the better scorers in the conference. Even as a freshman, he finished sixth at 15.3 points per game. He also led the conference in total points scored with 475, which I thought was pretty cool. He also played 35.1 minutes per game, which was second in the conference. So it's pretty crazy that a team like the Bulls relied on a freshman so much, and that somebody like McMurray could deliver pretty much every night.
I'm going to take the homer answer and say Jalen Adams is the conference rookie of the year. He was the preseason choice. He didn't get off to the start most people expected, but he's really come into his own over the last half of the season. He earned a spot in the starting lineup, took it away from a longtime starter in Rodney Purvis, and he's really run with it. His growth as an offensive player specifically has been exciting to watch. He's not quite the shooter he needs to be to truly make the impact he's capable of, but in transition and even in the half-court game, just getting to the rim, he looks unstoppable at times, and we're starting to see the flashes of greatness from Jalen Adams.
Yeah, Jalen's a phenomenal player. Don't get me wrong. I think he's going to be really special for UConn down the road. The only problem I have with giving him the award is just I don't see how somebody that's not on the freshman team could win the award for best freshman. So that was one of the reasons why I kept him off. But that being said, obviously anybody who's seen UConn play can see his talent and just see what he's going to be for UConn going forward.
I think I can speak for everyone in the room that our favorite freshman of the year was UCF's Taco Fall.
Oh my God.
Just
the best. So fun to watch.
I just couldn't get over how tall he was when they came here on Sunday. I went over and stood right up next to the court and took a picture of him, and it's just unbelievable how tall he was. I don't know how he functions as a daily human being.
And the thing that I thought was interesting about Fall, other than the fact that he's just absolutely gigantic, is that he's actually pretty polished. He can shoot free throws a little bit. He's got some post moves. It's hard and it's kind of rare to find guys out of high school that have somewhat refined post game like that, because they've never gone up against anybody that's even within a foot of them, and especially for Taco. So
2 feet.
Yeah, seriously. And he could be a real problem for UConn going forward once Brima leaves. It could be a real thing. And watching him play with Justin McBride, if it ever happens. It happened once in the road game when UCF played UConn, and it was just so much fun.
Coach of the Year, Elon, who do you got?
Has to be Houston's Kelvin Sampson. The Cougars surprised a lot of people. They finished 22-8, have a 2-seed in the conference tournament, and that is not the most talented team in this conference, I can tell you that. And for Sampson, who was the coach of Indiana for years, coach at Oklahoma, He's really, really taken that team and brought them up to a new level, and a lot faster than most had anticipated. And they're right there knocking on the door to get into the NCAA tournament. If they can have a decent showing this weekend, the Cougars are going to arrive.
Yeah, I agree with you, Elon. You know, 13-19 last year, up to 22-8 this year. They score the most points in the conference. I think he's done a great job with the players that he has.
Yeah, Samson's certainly a great coach, and Houston's a good team this year, but I think my coach of the year pick is Temple's Fran Dunphy. I've been a fan of watching the Owls. I've seen them play a little bit. Last season, I thought they were a tournament team. They got snubbed. This season, pretty much everyone had them outside of that top four with UConn, SMU, Cincinnati, and Memphis. I had them coming in fourth. Turns out they ran the table, and they ended up going 14-4 and coming in first. So I think the job that he's done there with players like DeCozy, like Alon said, I think it should be interesting to see how they do in the tournament because they have a lot of versatile players. Dunphy's a great late-game coach, so I think it'll be interesting to see how they play.
We've got an even split. I'm with you, Dan. I think it's Fran Dunphy as well. I don't think anyone had Temple finishing as high as they did. And didn't everyone tell me, maybe not, but for me at least, every game and every week, I always thought, okay, this is the week Temple finally slips up, SMU takes the reins, or Cincinnati or Tulsa takes the reins. Every week, Temple could just grind out wins, and I don't know for the life of me how it happened, but they're the one seed for a reason, and Fran Dunphy's a big part of that.
The Temple Owls are starting to become similar to Cincinnati for UConn. With the way those games are played, they're so ugly. They grind them out against UConn, and they always go down to the wire, and I think that's just the way Fran Dunphy likes to coach. He knows how to get the best out of his players in the last 3 minutes.
And no one mentioned Larry Brown, but I think he did a really good job this year with SMU just because, you know, the team knew they weren't going to be in the postseason this year, and they finished 25-5. So, you know, getting his players to buy into, you know, the system every day and just compete, he has to get some credit for that.
Over under 1.5 years before, it looks like SMU went 0-0 this season. When are those wins vacated?
Over,
but it
Larry
might
Brown,
happen.
Coach of the year in a year when his team went 0-0.
Might happen. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah.
All right. We're running out of time, but we've still got a couple of things to go through. Who's the tournament champion this weekend? And it's the final bid again. It always perplexes me how the American somehow gets that 3:15 game and is always the last deciding factor and the last piece of the puzzle.
UConn wins the tournament. I think it's going to happen. I think they figure out a way to get it done. I've gone back and forth.
You just want to stay in Florida till Monday.
Yep.
I do want to stay in Florida. It's going to be nice out. It's a lot better than here, even though today it's been gorgeous. But I think the Huskies have the most talent on the floor, no matter who they play. It's just a matter of getting the right five out there, which is something Kevin Ollie has consistently struggled with for the last two seasons. But, you know, there'll be a game where Daniel Hamilton goes 8-for-11. There'll be a game where Rodney Purvis gets hot from three. Maybe Sterling Gibbs makes a pass or two on the fast break. But the Huskies just have so many options to potentially go off where I just think it can happen. Hope it happens.
What about you, Dan?
I think I'm going to have to go with Dunphy's Temple Owls to win the whole thing. I just think that they're playing great right now. They have a pretty decent road to the championship game, at least. They've played well against UConn. They played well against Cincinnati. So I think they're the number one seed, and I think they're the favorite to win it.
I'm going to go with Houston. Like I said before, they score the most points in the league. You know, they got the leading scorer in the conference, Rob Gray, about 16 points per game. And, you know, I hope he's fully recovered from that, what was it, the ankle injury that he had against UConn. But, you know, Lawson and Pollard, both great players. They've won 3 in a row to end the year, so they're playing good basketball right now, and I think they have a good shot at winning it.
It's so up in the air, isn't it?
It's really a coin flip. Like, anybody could win. It could be any team.
Cincinnati could win.
Tulsa. I'm going with Tulsa. I think the fact that they have 9 seniors is really going to speak volumes to how hard they play. I think if they get over the hump of that Memphis game, I think that's going to be a really good game, by the way. I think if they get over the hump there and get this feel that they can make the tournament, you know, maybe with an at-large, but just to take it further and be sure, I think Tulsa could make a little bit of a run. But I think that'll do it for our first episode. Oh, go ahead, Dan.
I was just saying maybe you guys want to go around and do quick prediction for the UConn-Cincy game.
Oh, my fault.
Oh, sure.
Let's do it.
UConn wins 59-57. Also, bet the under, no matter what the line of the game is. Bet the under. These two teams will not combine to score more than 117 points.
I can't give a score like Alon can, but I think it's going to be close. But I think the Huskies can grind one out, probably by a point or two. As a fan, I'd like to see it happen. Like to see them make a little run and hopefully at least get in the NCAA tournament. And I think they have the talent to at least kind of get past Cincinnati, even as they're going through these kind of these like low spots in their season. So hopefully they can grind one out.
Yeah, going back to that under thing, I was watching the Duke NC State game earlier, and it was 53-50 at halftime, and I texted Dan. I was like, "Is there any chance the UConn Cincinnati game gets to 50 points each?" But yeah, I think it's a coin flip, but I think UConn is gonna win. I think they're gonna pull it out 60-57.
Yeah, I was gonna say 62-61 Huskies. I think we're all in agreement, though. It's going to be low scoring and close. Rarely does this game get outside of 5 points. But now that'll do it for our first episode of the 384 Decision. We hope everyone stays tuned for more episodes in the future. We will be back with more after spring break. So make sure to check out whus.org or dailycampus.com for more information. For Elon DiCarlo, Dan Madigan, Matt Zampini, I'm Jeff Lemon saying so long from the WHUS Stores studio. You've been listening to the 384 Decision, a new sports podcast brought to you by WHUS and the Daily Campus.